Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Wednesday, November 14th, 2012. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. Two votes. That's the latest report from Juneau, where absentee ballots were counted Tuesday in the race for House District 34. Haynes Republican Representative Bill Thomas now holds a two-vote lead over Sitka Democrat Jonathan Christ Tompkins. Here are the new totals from Division of Elections Director Gail Fenumiai. Bill Thomas, 4,054. Jonathan Christ Tompkins, 4,052. Christ Tompkins watched the absentee ballot count in person yesterday.
It's monotonous. It's literally feeding a ballot counter thousands of paper stock ballots.
But the counting isn't over. More ballots could still arrive by mail. Two more count dates are on the calendar, and anything can happen.
There are, I think, 167 absentee ballots that were requested but haven't come in by mail yet. So at least a couple of those, probably some kind of percentage of those will come in by mail, and who knows what way they're going to swing.
There are also three question ballots from Port Alexander left to count. Thomas also reached by phone in Juneau, called the election a seesaw, and reiterated his worry about Southeast's clout in the next legislative session. He says he'll have a seat on finance, but has already lost the chairmanship. And he noted that Sitka Republican Bert Stedman, though returned to office by voters, will no longer be co-chair of Senate Finance.
Very rarely has a district ever lost two co-chairs of finance in the history of the state. I think this might be the first time. You know, we're going to have to fight hard to get over it one way or the other. It'll put more work on either Jonathan or I. We'll have to work pretty hard, and I think there's less capital this year and more people that want it. So either way, it's going to be a tough battle for whoever.
Additional ballot counts for absentee votes that have yet to arrive by mail are set for November 19th and the 21st. Family, friends, and the community turned out on Veterans Day to dedicate a bridge south of Petersburg in honor of Donald Harry Kito, a U.S. Marine killed while fighting in Vietnam in 1967. Kito was remembered for his smile and the life he gave to his country just decades after his Japanese-American parents were sent to an internment camp during World War II. Joe Vicknicki reports.
A crowd gathered at the side of Mitkoff Highway south of Petersburg as John Kito of Anchorage welcomed the community in a cold November downpour.
Testament of my brother's value to this community of Petersburg is here with everyone that has come out on this wonderful Petersburg Day to honor the bridge that was dedicated to him through the legislative process and you as a community.
Legislation naming the bridge at Falls Creek, about 10 miles south of Petersburg, passed the state legislature last spring. The bill also named other Alaska bridges and airports and was sponsored by State Representative Bill Thomas.
I am from Haynes. I did a tour in Vietnam in 1968, and I turned 21 when I was there after 6 months. I came home, got elected the co-chair of the Veterans Caucus, and I've had many friends who committed suicide since then. I'm very sympathetic, very heartfelt for the veterans in any war, at any time. I know the sacrifices they made, whether they made it through the war and come home. So this
also helping the bill through the legislative process was State Senator Bert Stedman of Sitka. He grew up in Petersburg and remembers the day that Kito's body was returned home.
I can't remember not knowing the Kito family, and I happened to be on the dock at the airplane float with the little boy, 11, when they brought Harry home, and the Marines got out in full dress uniforms and flags and marched with Harry up the dock when they brought him to town. And I didn't know who it was in the, that they had brought back to the community till I got home and asked my parents, and I'd never forgotten that day.
Kito's parents were taken from Petersburg and interned at a government camp in Puyallup, Washington during World War II. His father was a Japanese immigrant, and his mother was a Tlingit-speaking daughter of a Japanese immigrant. Harry Kito was born May 18, 1942, in Tacoma, the first baby born of that population of Japanese Americans taken from their homes and held in Puyallup. Sister Amelia Kito Gage of Sitka reflected on that history during an interview at KFSK.
You know, it's just remarkable to cast over history and think about our little Harry and his family and his return here and then growing up in this very, very loving community toward children and toward families and going off to Vietnam on behalf of our country. We just really feel strongly that that history is rich, and we're proud of what he did.
The 25-year-old Akito was a lance corporal and part of a communications platoon in the 1st Battalion of the 9th Marine Regiment. He was killed by an artillery round July 8, 1967, near Quang Tri, Vietnam. His fellow Marines say they lost several platoon members during that week. Four of them made the trip to Petersburg for the bridge dedication. John Crew of Mill Spring, North Carolina, remembers Keto for his smile.
Harry had just a smile always. It didn't matter if it was a bad time or a good time. He had a smile on his face. And Harry was a little older than the rest of us by 4 years, I guess, which at 18 and 19, 4 years was a lot.
The Marines say they still get together at least twice a year, and for them, Veterans Day is a chance to remember Keto and the other platoon members lost during the war. The trip to Petersburg is a chance for them to mourn and get to know the family of their fallen platoon member, and also get some recognition for service that did not happen when they first came home from fighting. The ceremony ended with the family unveiling a plaque nearby the bridge, and Keto's sister Amelia offered a blessing.
In this community, from when he died, and the community came out and supported our family and let us know that they were in pain as well. That was a blessing. So we are offering our blessing to this bridge for whoever travels over it, that you love one another, that you cherish one another while you have them, and we know that this happens in this community. But be on the watch for people who need that kind of care and love while you have them. And the vitality and life that Harry had in life that we all knew is just priceless. It's priceless.
In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicnicki.
The Alaska Board of Fisheries is scheduled to take up a number of controversial proposals when they hold their FinFish meeting next month in Western Alaska community of Naknek. The most controversial proposals are expected to be those that seek to scrap Bristol Bay's traditional 32-foot length restriction for drift vessels. KDLG's Mike Mason has the story.
3 years ago, many observers expected the Alaska Board of Fisheries to approve allowing drift vessels longer than 32 feet to operate in Bristol Bay. However, the final vote came up just one vote short, and the 32-foot restriction is still in place. During next month's meeting, the Alaska Board of Fisheries will consider a handful of proposals that would allow longer vessels, and those proposals were considered during last week's Nooshigak Fish and Game Advisory Committee meeting in Dillingham. The recommendations of the advisory committee will be given to the Board of Fisheries in an attempt to better inform their decision-making process. Nooshigak AC member Robin Samuelson is on record opposing any efforts to allow vessels longer than 32 feet in Bristol Bay.
Any length beyond the 32 is just another cash call on the people of Bristol Bay. Most of our people cannot afford the larger boats. We've got boats entering the bay now that are $600,000 plus, and I don't think there's too many people in Bristol Bay that can afford the price of a new boat, especially a larger boat. And if we allow larger boats, most of our watershed residents are going to be disenfranchised even more by the intimidation of the larger boats. Remember when we had the 32-foot limit being reinvented by Protection Division that allowed boat on bow as long as they were in flotation to up to 4 feet in length. I was fishing in Iggy at that time. It was ramming and jamming, and our little boats couldn't compete with them big boats unless you wanted your windows knocked out. So I'll be in opposition of Proposal 32.
If it's approved by the Alaska Board of Fisheries, Proposal 32 would increase the vessel length restriction to 42 feet if the vessel is a licensed catcher-processor by the state of Alaska. The proposal stipulates that operators of the longer vessels would have to provide weekly documentation of product transfer either to a freezer facility or to a direct buyer. Another of the Nooshigak AC members who opposes allowing vessels longer than 32 feet to fish in Bristol Bay is Hans Nicholson from Wasilla.
If people are wanting more deck space, classic example of recent this year, this summer, there was a vessel that entered the Bristol Bay fishery that's 32 feet long and 18 and a half feet wide. So I think given those provisions, they've proven that there is adequate space on board to meet those requirements.
After just a few minutes of discussion, the Nooshkak Fish and Game Advisory Committee unanimously opposed passage of Proposal 32. The committee also unanimously opposed passage of Proposal 33 that seeks to increase the drift vessel length restriction to 36 feet if the vessel chills their catch at the point of harvest. The proposal would allow vessels up to 39 feet in length if the vessel can process and freeze the catch on board. The proposal sponsor is drifter Nick Lee from Utah. In the proposal language, he claims the current 32-foot length restriction restricts deck space and hull space. Lee believes that allowing larger vessels could result in improved salmon quality, which would result in higher prices for fish. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
Alaska's Commerce Commissioner says the disaster from poor king salmon returns was worse than first estimated. In a letter to the state's congressional delegation, Susan Bell says the commercial fishery permit holders lost an estimated $16.8 million in direct revenue. She says that doesn't include the economic effect on crew members who helped harvest salmon or processors and support businesses. She says it also doesn't include account for revenue lost by communities from fish and sales tax. The U.S. Department of Commerce in September declared king salmon fisheries a disaster in several watersheds. The declaration covered the Yukon and Kuskokwim rivers, which flow into the Bering Sea, and the Cook Inlet region south of Anchorage, which includes the Kenai River. The declaration made commercial fishermen eligible for federal disaster relief. And a quick look at Sitka Zone weather. Today, expect rain with highs around 44. Tonight, rain showers likely, lows around 39.